G'day, Dons fans. After basking in the joy that only seeing your footy team can deliver, our mind quickly turns to our next challenge. I'm Jonathan Walsh, and joining me in the Don the Stat studio to preview our round two clash against the Swans is Ian Hume. Humey, how's things, mate?
I'm good, Jono. It's always a good week coming off a Bombers win, and I'm starting to build my hopes up that we can take on one of the biggest challenges in football against the Swans in Sydney and succeed. How about yourself, Jono?
Yeah, hope's a dangerous thing, mate. But it was good to be at the G. Saw some familiar faces, including your own. A number of other Dons fans as well, which was great. And it was nice to be out of the G and walk out hearing the Essendon song playing loud. And yeah, that always gives you a bit of an extra spring in the step during the week. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the footy this Saturday night too, mate.
Yeah, me too. Well, look, before we get into tonight's show, once again, we'll do our usual shout out to our new Patreon members, and it's really exploded this week. So there's a whole lot of people to thank for joining up for their first time. So shout out to Cam Grinham, number one Essendon Nuffy, Get Sourced, Christopher Woodgate, Rebecca Pettigrove, AA Wade, Tate Baker, Wes Agar Statement Piece, Sharon Ramsey, Overblown, John Falazzo, EJ, Jeremy Easy, Henry Lee, Jacob Foster, Christian Udovicic, Jack, Steve Ricciatelli, Jack Swalu, Pat Luila, Casey Venture, and Anthony Artusa. We're getting a lot of different names at the moment, and also a lot of names that I'm probably butchering. So I do apologize if you have signed up and I've butchered your name. I'm sure that's not the reason why you signed up, but we really appreciate your support.
Yeah, that is a lot of names, mate. There's some creative ones there. But yeah, it's going from strength to strength. It's been a lot of good fun and good conversation, both during and post the match. So yeah, and you shared some extra data and insights in there as well, which was great. And thanks to everyone for jumping on board and supporting us. We do promise that we'll never take it for granted. And yeah, keep working hard to provide more insights and analysis.
Yeah. And just on that, it was great to see the response to our first Patreon-only first thoughts that we put out following the Hawthorn game, where we go through our immediate positives and negatives coming out of the match. And we also had a lot of participation for the Patreon voting for the Don the Stat Best and Fairest, which we've called the Jack Kirby Medal. That's something that's going to be going on throughout the year. And if you want to get involved, you can find the link to our Patreon in the description of this episode.
Yeah, awesome, mate. It was good fun seeing those votes come in. Lots of people valuing different things, which is great to see. Yeah, different perspectives and even people who sat at different parts of the MCG or people that watched it on the telly seeing different things as well and causing us all to think a little bit about some of the roles that maybe weren't we didn't instinctively notice. So yeah, that was great, mate. But let's get stuck into reviewing the game against the Hawks, shall we?
Yeah, and look, for those of you that have forgotten, in the previous week, Essendon 17-5-105 defeated Hawthorn 11-17-81, and that 24-point margin was the same margin that was on the grand final day 40 years before, the one they were celebrating before the game. Hawthorn were spirited and had their opportunities, but I think Essendon's class and fitness just got them over the line in that last quarter when they pulled away.
Yeah, I hadn't even made the margin connection to the 1984 grand final, mate. So yeah, well done there. It was good to see, a number of those legends go around the MCG before the game and signing autographs outside Gate 3 as well. Such a special part of the fabric and history of the football club. It was really touching to see them and start to build that connection with the current group of players as well, I think is really important. But it was also pleasing to see that we were able to run out the game the better of the two teams and win that last quarter and win it quite well and do so in some conditions that weren't really football-like, were they? It was pretty warm there.
Yeah, I was lucky I was sitting in shade the whole day, so I know there's some people who got pretty cooked out there, and I'm sure the players did as well. I think that's part of the reason why perhaps we saw some sloppy skills with some sweaty hands out there, although handballing to a Essendon player, handballing to a player's feet is a constant, whether it's in a hot day or a cold day. So maybe I'm being too generous there with the sweaty hands. Well, for those again new to Don the Stat, what we tend to do with our reviews of previous games is to talk about what we thought might happen last week and use that as a springboard into looking at what happened in the game. And one of the things we spoke about that we needed to do in our match preview was the importance of winning the contest against the Hawks, given the way they won their games last year. And then obviously, how will we overcome the absence of our most prolific contested ball winner in Parrish? Well, I think we all expected Durham to step up in the midfield based on the preseason games, but also with the addition of Archie Perkins, who really took a big step last week, we were able to overcome this loss. And whilst we did lose contested possession by six, we did end up matching them at stoppage clearance 22 apiece, but we also were dominant in the centre, winning nine more than Hawks. And not only that, we were able to do more with our contested ball wins than the Hawks were. So we scored 10 goals won from stoppage situations, including three goals straight from centre clearances, whilst the Hawks could only score a total of three goals two. So a seven goal advantage from stoppage situations. And Essendon's score from stoppage was twice as much as their average from the previous year. And we conceded about half as much as we were conceding. So a really good performance from stoppage. So if you can compare it to the game against the Hawks last year, for example, we conceded 35 points from stoppage and scored 42. So again, both against our averages from last year and against the Hawks last year, we did better in both our scores from stoppage and conceding scores from stoppage. So what that suggested was that we had time when we had time to set up at stoppage situations, we were both very effective at attacking from that source and defending the opposition. Do you notice anything in particular from that game about the way we were set up at stoppage that may have differed from the previous years?
Yeah, some subtle things, mate. I thought we held our space and positioning really well, both at centre clearances and stoppage clearances, and there was a number of sort of nuanced things going on. I thought for the most part, Setterfield tried to get to Newcombe and restricted his access to the ball. Newcombe averaged 5.5 clearances a game last year, their number two ranked player in that part of the game. He only had two clearances for the match on Saturday, which was a huge win for us. And Setterfield did a really good job just using his body to get in front of him and not allow him to get momentum when he attacked the ball. Newcombe also averaged 6.4 score involvements last year, which was the most at Hawthorn. He had just three on Saturday. And you know, whilst it's not the be-all and end-all for a contested midfielder, his disposal efficiency was down from 76.9 to 61.9 on Saturday. So, 76.9 in 2023, I should say, down to 61.9% on Saturday. So, I think that was the test, a little bit of a testament to the pressure that he was under by Setterfield and all of our mids, really. We had 66 tackles on Saturday, which was the sixth most of the round. So, yeah, I thought that worked really well. And we did really miss him, you know, when he went out of the side injured last year. I thought Perkins was really aggressive. It wasn't anything different in terms of how Perkins played, but just that he was given the responsibility to do so. I think last year when we saw him play big midfield minutes, he played more of that centre field role, didn't he? He played on, you know, on the likes of Cripps and tried to take on Bontempelli as well. But he was, you know, he was really aggressive when he had the ball, and he was really aggressive at the man when he didn't. As was Durham, you know, if we didn't get first possession, then we were just all over the Hawthorn mids to win the ball back. Perkins had 12 tackles. Only James Rowbottom, you know, who we come up against this week with 13, has had more in a game so far this season. So 12 is a huge effort. And then when we did win first possession, those two in particular, Perkins and Durham, were really creative and explosive. Perkins almost had some, Jake Stringer-like moments, didn't he, with the way he exploded out of the centre square. And then what it did do was it allowed Zach Merritt to play a role that I guess just suits his size and his skill set. He was able to set up an outside layer at stoppages. And the thing with Zach is he's such a dangerous player. You can't sit off him or sit in front of him. You have to be with him. And I reckon he identified that Warple was their next, big contested ball winner. You know, him and Newcombe are the two that really get the job done. And those two are matched up quite regularly throughout the game. And he just took him, you know, a metre or two away from the stoppage. So Warple couldn't do what he did best, nor could Warple move with Zach the way that Zach does. And Zach just got, you know, in that first receiver role, and it allowed him to use his best attributes, which really is his vision and his foot skills. But he also wasn't too far away when he needed to pressure and tackle, which is also something that we know he does really well. So I think it just gave us, you know, layers, defensive and contested and offensive, both with and without the ball. And then after the first possession, both with and without the ball, we just reacted and moved really, really well. I thought it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, you know, we thought they might have tagged Merritt. Obviously, they ran their most likely tagger as a sub, which I thought was a weird decision. Doesn't really scream impact player, but again, just that smartness that Merritt has to not take a player like Walpole to the ball really stands us in good stead, especially when we have Darcy Parrish coming back this week and another player who's really good at getting first hands to the ball and keeping players like Merritt free for that next possession and using his foot skills is going to be really important against the Swans. It'll be interesting to see how that goes against the Swans. They might not be as worried about a Zach Merritt, given they've probably got a bigger or more midfield depth than Hawthorn did on the day, whether they just go head-to-head with him there and not be so worried about him. But again, that's something we could consider when we look at the Swans in more depth. I think if anyone was to take a major concern out of that game was probably the way that we turned over the ball, particularly when we were coming out of the back line. And it was those errors in the back line. And for the most part, it was more about our skill errors as opposed to Hawthorn's pressure, I thought. That's sort of what kept Hawthorn in the game longer than they probably should have been. Most of their score came off turnover. So Nick Martin, playing his first game as a halfback, had 9 turnovers, which is his highest ever number for that stat. And then McGrath also had 7. It did feel, you know, watching at the ground, that, as I said, it was as much our disposal quality as opposed to Hawthorn setup. Although I did also feel that the Hawks did a good job for most of the day at denying us that corridor ball until the game broke open at the end, and I actually felt that they broke us through the middle earlier than we managed to start getting the ball through the middle for them, which is a bit of a concern there. I guess, how much of the overall concern, Gardner, should be borne by the players moving the ball from the back line compared to those further up the field that need to be working to create options for these players?
Yeah, I think a healthy dose of both. There's probably no such thing as a genuine unforced turnover in a game of AFL. There's always some level of pressure, whether it's, you know, genuine pressure or it's inferred, or just the pressure that comes with, you know, playing in front of a big crowd. But I felt we uncharacteristically gave the ball back in, you know, at times, and players that are normally really safe with ball in hand. And we did so in areas that then weren't conducive to being able to defend transition, which was obviously the other challenge that we had on the day. We had 63 turnovers for a game, and people probably look at a stat sheet and see that number and think that that's a lot. The AFL average so far in 2024 is 65.4. So, by that marker, we didn't have a lot of turnovers, but I thought it was where those turnovers happened that was a real problem for us. 16 of them happened in our own defensive 50. A further 15 of them happened between our defensive 50 metre line and the centre of the ground. So 31 of our, you know, 63 turnovers in the defensive side of the ground. And people are probably listening going, well, yeah, that sounds about right. Half of them happening in one half of the ground. But you typically see a greater spread of your turnovers happening in your forward half of the ground because you're taking more risks in that part of the ground. Your intercept marks typically happen in your defensive 50 when you're trying to kick to contest. So it is more than we're like. And I'm not actually sure a lot of that was due to Hawthorn's structure and pressure. It's hard to measure structure. You sort of do it by the eye, don't you? And they certainly had some nippy small forwards who chased and harassed. But from a pressure perspective, they had 9 tackles inside 50, which is below the AFL average of 9.72. And they had 44 tackles for the match, which is 7 fewer than the AFL average. So I don't think it was the Hawthorn pressure that contributed to that. I think it was more just our mistakes. And hopefully there's an element in that to players just adjusting to new roles. You know, Nick Martin's first game at halfback in the AFL environment. We know he played there in the practice games. But I think there's an element of that. We lacked some outside pace until Sardis came on in the second half. Redmond had a really uncharacteristically quiet day and off day, which, you know, I'm sure when he does come back, he'll bounce back from. And we also didn't have Jordan Ridley, who's that sort of safe hands, add composure when we need it, sort of get out of jail free option in our back 50. So, yeah, I think those things probably played a bit of a role in that. And then the connection with the midfield wasn't great. So, it was a worry on Saturday. It's an area I'm pretty confident that we'll get better at just through time and continuity, though.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And as sort of mentioned earlier, it's something we're going to have to improve rapidly at. The Swans certainly aren't going to make as many mistakes as the Hawks did with their entries and their shots at goal. So we'll really need to tighten our ball moving up before Saturday. Although I do think that the scoring shot difference has been overplayed in terms of the Hawks having so many more scoring shots. If Hawthorn did convert more of their chances, the ball would have ended up back in the middle where we had dominance. So I don't think that if they'd kicked straighter, that necessarily would have meant that they would have won the game. I think we, given that we were winning the centre clearances quite comfortably, I think it's likely that they kick a goal and then we give ourselves the best chance to kick another goal ourselves, which often happened on the day where Hawthorn would kick a goal and then we would take it out of the centre and we would kick a goal quite quickly. So I don't necessarily buy into that idea that Hawthorn were the better side because they had more scoring shots.
No, I don't either, mate. We won centre clearances 18-9, and that was the largest differential of the round. We regularly answered their challenge, as you said. Our players were calm and converted under pressure. We saw that with Perkins with his two in the third. You know, Gresham when he slotted his on the run. I think we would have been fine. We kicked three goals to their one from centre clearances. So, you know, had they converted a couple more and the ball went back to the centre, then, you know, it went back to a part of the ground where we excelled at and took it away from part of the ground that we really struggled with, and that was moving the ball out of our back line. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that was overstated.
Yeah. I guess again, sort of in a similar vein in terms of what those turnovers led to, how do you think we defended transition for the day? It's obviously probably the biggest talking point about Essendon coming from 2023 to 2024. Would we see any sort of improvement in that? It's probably easier to judge at the ground rather than watching on TV how they're going in terms of defending that transition. What were your thoughts on the day about how they handled it?
Yeah, it needs to get better, no doubt. Hawthorn are a team that's really ambitious by foot and they play with real dare. So they're going to be a bit of a different prospect to what we'll face through most of this season, including against the Swans this week. I do think we prioritised other things as well. We sent Guelphy to Sicily, and that matchup sort of went through the first half until they tried to do a bit more to free Sicily up and put him on Stringer, which, you know, didn't really free Sicily up. All it did was bring Langford into the game, but it sort of meant that we had one less player providing pressure or structuring up, and that certainly worked to our benefit when it came to scoring. Guelphy kicked two goals himself. He gave one off to Stringer, and it took Sicily out of the air and reduced his ability to intercept mark. And we know that that's something that he does really, really well. But I think at times it came at the expense of stopping Hawthorn rebound, because we saw moments in the game where Guelphy, to his role, so this isn't criticism of him, but to his role, even when at times when Sicily was behind the play, so in order for him to receive the ball, his Hawthorn teammate would have had to have moved the ball backwards. Guelphy ran to Sicily rather than going to set up in the zone. So, you know, we prioritised that. I did my review on Twitter, and I shared it in our Patreon feed, and I'll put it on donthestat.com after this as well, or in the next day or so. But I showed some moments in that where we also just had some individual players, you know, not moving into the right position or not moving quickly enough. So I think it's, rather than it being a, you know, a whole team thing, and the irony in that is you do need the whole team to do it to be effective. We just had some moments where there was a couple of players that didn't quite, you know, do the right thing. And, you know, at times that was senior players as well. There was a moment in the third quarter where Langford, you know, didn't go and zone up and pointed instead of, you know, getting where he should have. And that resulted in Hawthorn going down the other end. So it needs to get better. I'm not throwing out the baby with the bathwater about it just yet. And then I think on the upside, our tackling pressure inside forward 50 was really strong. We had 14 for the match. The AFL average, as I mentioned earlier, is 9.72. We averaged 10 a game for last season. So, you know, 40% increase on what we did last year is a strong start. We scored 20 points from turnovers that we created in our forward 50. So Hawthorn had the ball. We won it back inside our forward 50. And that's up from an average of 13 points a game last season. And then we scored another 13 points from forward 50 stoppages, which was up from 7 points last season. So creating scores from within forward 50 was a positive. We did it through creating turnovers and creating stoppages and then hitting the scoreboard. And that 14 inside 50 tackles was from a pretty low number of inside 50s. We only had the 51 for the game, which talks to our, struggles in moving the ball from our defensive 50, and something that we need to address. But I do think that our ball movement contributed a fair bit to our inability to effectively disrupt Hawthorn's ball movement, because when we gave them the ball back, and where we gave it back, we had to defend too much of the ground. We were asking our defender, we were asking a lot of our defenders. And just as a bit of a guide, we averaged an inside 50 tackle 27% of the time that we went inside 50. The AFL average is 18. So I think our forward pressure element of defending against opposition transition was really, really strong. What wasn't great was our ability to get everyone into the zone as quickly as possible. We've got some work to do there. And then being better in transition ourselves to not turn the ball over frequently in dangerous parts of the ground. And just sort of to round that out, mate, Hawthorn scored 61 points to our 46 from turnovers. So they didn't hurt us as much as they could have. Hawthorn scored 20 points for the game from chains that started in their own defensive 50. And then went coast to coast. One goal, one from stoppages, plus two rush behinds. Sorry, one goal, one from stoppages, plus two behinds from kick-ins, and then one goal, three behinds, plus two rush behinds from turnovers. So, yes, we let them do it too frequently, but it didn't hurt us on the scoreboard as much as it could have. So, again, we have to improve that quickly, given that we take on the Swans this week. Where they had the most scoreboard pressure was turnovers in their own attacking half. They scored three goals, three for the game, when we turned the ball over in our own defensive half of the ground. So I think really for me, the biggest challenge walking out of that ground was our ability to effectively get the ball over the halfway mark and transition ourselves. And I think more so about us rather than what Hawthorn did to disrupt it.
Yeah. And just finally on the Hawthorn game, I think another thing that stood out in the positives column was the way our forward line functioned on the day. You mentioned the forward 50 tackles shows how hard those forwards were working, when the ball hit the ground or we didn't win direct control of the ball. And something I was really impressed with was the fact that when Langford was down early and not really impacting the game, we had Stringer stand up. And when the Hawks obviously turned their focus to Jake Stringer, Langford was able to bolt up with three goals in the second half. And I think also Wright was generally around for most of the day as well, kicked a couple of important goals there. And then there was obviously some good work from the small forwards as well. I guess one thing we spoke about at the end of last year was how Wright and Langford didn't really seem to work well together at the time, and that part of that is due to the fact that at the start of last season, before Wright gets injured, Langford's training as a back, and so they don't have that, they haven't built that connection over that time. And then Wright comes back into the side, and they're trying to work it out, in the middle of an AFL season. And we've obviously seen Stringer added to that mix as well. He didn't go into the midfield at all on last Saturday, basically playing as another, medium-sized semi key forward. I guess, how did you see the group functioning as a whole in the day? Was there ever much time when they were getting in each other's way? Or, we did win, we kicked over 100 points. It seemed like it was pretty effective, at least on the Hawthorn game.
Yeah, I mean, you just touched on it there, mate. We won the game and we scored over 100 points, both, really strong indicators of a forward line that functioned pretty well. And, I thought it did once we got the ball past the middle of the ground. And in part, that's the benefit that winning stoppages affords you. It gives you a bit more space to work within. I thought generally our forwards competed well when the ball was in the air. We didn't get outmarked too frequently. They separated well. We scored 51% of the time we went inside 50. The AFL average so far this season is 48%. So, that was a tick there. We seem to keep our bigger forwards in Wright, Langford, and Jones deep to create space for Stringer. I don't know whether that was just design around Stringer himself, or it was that Stringer had that favourable matchup in the first half in particular before Sicily went to him, and we decided that. What Wright and Langford did really well was that they went on lateral leads. We know that's Langford's strength. He likes to sort of duck out into pockets of space. If we think about where he took that juggling mark in the last quarter, that's his bread and butter, isn't it? Leading to those sort of pockets on short lateral leads and backing in his ability to convert. And then Wright, who we normally see trying to get a bit more straight up the ground. He led to, you know, almost if you visualize the 50 meter paint, the 50 meter or the five and the zero markings, he sort of made a bit more of an effort to lead up towards those. So again, on those lateral leads, but a little bit deeper. And he also backed in his ability to finish. And we saw that in the first quarter in particular. And then one in, was it in the second, I think, where he kicked that goal from just on 50. So yeah, we backed in our ability to finish and played those forwards to their strength. And then that created some space for Stringer to work in and you know, take marks 30 to 40 metres out from goal, aided by the work that Guelphy did to keep Sicily quiet. I think at times, though, it did come as a bit of a consequence of our ball movement up the ground. We just lacked that outlet kick. I would have liked to have seen Jones and Langford and Wright at times get up the ground a little bit more. We did change it in quarter four. We saw Langford in particular get up to the wings, and I thought that helped us to move the ball a bit better. But overall, you know, we took 14 marks inside 50, which, you know, ranks us fifth in the AFL at the moment. We averaged 11.8 last year, so it was an improvement on that. We took 11 contested marks, which is plus two on the 2023, or on our 2023 result and the AFL average this season. So overall, mate, I thought it was a big tick.
Yeah, I agree. Look, just as we move off the what happened on the day for the Hawthorn match, and then look at sort of what came out in the post-match stuff. So firstly, the Mason Redmond suspension. Obviously, it's very frustrating to not have him going up against such an imposing side like the Swans with the way that they're playing. And it's also, I think, when it's based off a new interpretation or a new AFL directive about how these sort of things are treated, it can be a bit frustrating when you are sort of that guinea pig, the first case where, you know, these sort of incidents where he struck the Hawthorn player with an open palm, but in the face, and that's been deemed intentional and that's been worthy of a week. It is a bit frustrating. You don't see them challenge, or you're frustrated that, you know, your team has been the one that's had to cop it. But I think particularly you did a pretty good job after the fact when it came out, sort of explaining the reasoning behind it and eventually why the Bombers wouldn't appeal, or if they did appeal, there'd be very little chance of success. And I think you know, it came out that the club wasn't going to appeal and they sort of explained their decision, I think that sort of calmed down people a little bit in terms of understanding the decision-making behind that. Although it is frustrating when you see Sicily get off for something probably even more stupid, or it's even more of a stupid action than what Redmond's was. But, you know, you can only control what you can control. You can't worry about what are happening with other clubs. So I mean, I'm not sure there's much really to go on with there. You, as I said on Twitter, you did a pretty good job of explaining what was happening with that.
Yeah, it probably depends a little bit on who you ask about that, mate. But I think there's two schools of thought, right? There's it was a stupid thing to do. He deserves to cop his whack. You know, hopefully he learns a lesson out of it and it helps to make him a better player. Plus, the rules are pretty black and white now, and a challenge would have just been a waste of 10 grand, which comes out of our soft cap, and that's money that effectively we can't spend on other things. And then the other school of thought is, well, at least challenge it, show your playing group that, you know, you're going to back in your players and support them. I guess the count, and look, they're both valid, and they're both of those arguments I think are completely correct. It just depends on you know, which side of the fence you kind of view it from. But I think that, you know, we couldn't get it downgraded on impact because it was already judged low impact. We couldn't get it downgraded on intentional because the AFL changed the rule for 2024. If you go to strike somebody, whether it's with an open hand or a fist or even in a pushing action, and it slips high to the head, then it's graded as intentional. So it was going to be impossible really for us to get that thrown out, that all we would have been doing was spending 10 grand to show a little bit of solidarity with a player who's been suspended. But, you know, I sort of come from the camp that Brad Scott discussed yesterday, and that was he gave away a free kick. It was a silly thing to do. He's let his teammates down. And, you know, from my perspective now, I hope he just learns from it. And there was a moment in the last quarter where he had a one-on-one, and I can't remember who the Hawthorn player was now, but they were both running at the ball. He got there first. He put his head over it. He won it and handballed, I think, to to Heppel, who then kicked across the center square, and we went forward. And that's the Mason Redmond that I really enjoy and love, that one that channels that combativeness and that energy and that intensity at the ball. Yeah, I think giving away a free kick and being a bit undisciplined in those parts of the game can, you know, whilst it didn't hurt us on Saturday, there were times last year where it did. And yeah, hopefully that's a part of his game that comes out of it. We can't change it now. He's suspended. He's not playing this week. So we move on. And then, of course, the other, I guess, disappointing news to come out of the game was that Zach Reed went off at halftime with a hamstring strain. And of course, we found out yesterday or the day before that Guelphy's also got a bit of a calf strain. So yeah, disappointing. Obviously, Zach Reed, we want to see him playing as many games as possible, but it sounds like they're going to take a really conservative approach there. And, you know, he might miss, you know, 4 to 6. And hopefully that still means he can come back and play, you know, 10 to 12 or more games this season. And, yeah, shame for Guelphy, isn't it? Because he had a really good game on Saturday. He kept Sicily quiet in that first half. He hit the scoreboard and contributed really, really well. So, yeah, never nice to see anyone injured.
No, and again, I wonder how much the hot day contributed to that. I think it's more likely that you'll get those sort of strains on hot days and there's a bit more exertion there. So again, bit unlucky for both of those players, and hopefully they can get back at this season and really, you know, make the most of it, especially when, you know, we've had Reed with a full preseason and looking likely to sort of cement a place in the side. Then in Guelphy's obviously made a really positive start with his game on Sicily and a role playing a role that could really benefit us going forward against some more of the good distributors for other sides and really locking down on an area where we may have struggled in the past in terms of preventing those halfback players from moving the ball up the ground. But look, let's turn our attention to Saturday night. We'll start going through our Swans preview, and we always tend to go back and look at what happened last time we played this side. And the last time Essendon faced Sydney was back in round 20 of last year at Marvel Stadium, where Essendon 15-9-99 lost to Sydney 15-11-101. It was a real heartbreaker for the Dons. We came back from 37 points down early in the third quarter to fall short just by 2. It was a game where the Bombers really dominated territory. They had 22 more inside 50s than the Swans, but they got found out the other way. The Swans had a score better than every second entry inside 50. So the Dons really dominated in the contest. They had 23 more contested possessions and 13 more clearances. But despite this dominance, scores from stoppage were even for the game. And the Swans, as I said, transitioned the ball easily when they got it. They scored 43 points from back half turnovers there. If you look at the individual players, Zach Merritt led the way with 39 disposals, whilst Parrish and Caldwell had 27 each. Our key forwards, Kyle Langford and Peter Wright, kicked 9 goals between them. And then if you look at the Swans, there's some big names here in terms of players who are in form now. With Errol Goulden, he had 37 touches and over 700 metres gained for the day, whilst Lloyd, Campbell and Warner each had more than 26 disposals and over 500 metres gained. So the Swans players, their prime movers were really good at getting their hands on the ball and getting it forward when they won the ball back off us when we were in our forward line. And then in terms of goal kickers, Joel Amati, who's started the season quite well, he had 4 goals in it, and Sam Wicks had 3.
There's something about these two teams when they play each other, isn't it? Just producing close battles, and there's been some really low-scoring affairs, and this was the opposite, a really high-scoring affair. And, you know, it was a game that you just went through some of the key numbers. Like, you don't lose too many games having 22 more inside 50s than your opposition. And you know, keeping them to, I think it was 47 or 46 inside 50s for the game. Like, if we were given that going into this Saturday, that we were going to keep the Swans to only 40 odd inside 50s, we'd take it in a heartbeat and think that we were going to walk away with 4 points. So yeah, it was disappointing that we couldn't get the win that night. But once they got inside 50, they had a lot of space. There were a lot of one-on-ones that our defenders had to contend with, and yeah, we just weren't able to stop them from scoring. So I'm pausing in reflection there because I remember walking away just really frustrated on that night. But let's move on to 2024, mate.
Yeah, so we'll start with the list changes, and the Swans had 10 people leave their list from 2023, and that was obviously headlined by the retirement of perpetual Essendon torturer Buddy Franklin after a stellar career. So good to see the back of him, and I'm sure now that he's retired, Cale Hooker won't be seeing that replay of him running down the wing quite so much. So good news there for Cale. And he was joined in retirement by Tom Hickey and, unfortunately, Paddy McCartan, after McCartan received medical advice that due to his sustained concussions, it wouldn't be safe for him to continue playing. So unfortunate for him, and especially after getting a second chance with the Swans. And last year, those three players who retired played 13, 12, and 4 games respectively. Dylan Stevens, who also played 13 games last year, was traded to North Melbourne, whilst Ryan Clark, who played 16, Will Gould, Mark Sheaver, who played 4 and 3 between them, and then 3 others were also delisted. And so the Swans have obviously topped up with a view of, you know, really pushing for the flag this year. Brody Grundy was acquired after a failed stint at Melbourne, and James Jordan joined him in heading to the Swans, and he went via free agency. And then after a hamstring injury caused him to miss the Pies Premiership, Taylor Adams sought a trade and ended up with the Swans, whilst Joel Hamling joined from Fremantle. However, neither Adams or Hamling have featured for the Swans so far this year, nor have any of the Swans' 3 draftees or their Cat B rookie Indy Kirk, who is the son of Brett. None of them have seen senior game time yet either.
Yeah, Taylor Adams has been injured, of course, and he got injured in their first practice match, and Hamling's an emergency this week. So, you know, he's close to selection. I was a little bit surprised that he didn't come in, actually. And I wonder now that they've seen we've gone with Draper and gone a little bit tall. Spoiler alert, we'll talk about selections in a sec, but whether they might look at swinging a change there. But both Grundy and Jordan appear to have made an immediate impact in their first 2 games. Grundy has had a real impact for them at stoppages, which I know we'll cover off on shortly. He's had their second most number of stoppage clearances so far and third for contested possessions in their 2 games. And Jordan has given them more flexibility through the midfield. He's been spending some time on the wing, but also running through, you know, as a centre bounce midfielder. He attended 46% of centre bounces last week. And remarkably, the Swans used 7 midfielders last week, and they all averaged between 64% and 32% of attendances. So not only did they rotate heavily, you know, using 7 mids, but they spread the load, you know, quite evenly among them, which was really interesting. And that's the flexibility that a player like James Jordan, who can play inside or outside, affords them.
Yeah, and Jordan is someone you were really keen on towards the end of last year that Essendon should go after. And obviously we went in a different direction there. Although I think if you were picking between Essendon at the end of last year and the Swans, I think if you were looking for success, you'd be going to the Swans based on the previous year. And it is interesting with the Swans with their midfield. They're obviously no Adams, but also no Parker and no Mills. You know, that's 3 really talented players that you would expect to see lining up at the first bounce for the Swans if they're all fit, but they've managed to cover those losses without really much of a loss there, although we'll get into their centre bounce numbers, which has been a bit lower compared to some of their other metrics. But look, just again reflecting on last year, Sydney finished the regular season in 8th spot, having recovered from a poor start to make it into the finals, although surprise, surprise, when we're talking about the Swans, a controversial umpiring decision this time against Adelaide got them the win that was enough to make it into the postseason. Their elimination final against Carlton saw the Blues lead for the whole game, although the Swans did reduce the margin from 30-6 by the final siren to bow out of season 2023. So far this season, Sydney have probably been the most impressive side. Obviously, GWS and Gold Coast have both won 2 games, but Sydney have had the hardest road. They've played 2 top 4 sides from 2023 in Melbourne and Collingwood, and they obviously beat the reigning premiers on their home track last week. And despite having the harder draw, they're only 2% behind GWS in second place.
Yeah, they've certainly been impressive, mate. I watched both of their games, and yeah, they've been really good. It is tricky at this stage of the season to know how each team is going compared to the rest of the comp. In their game in round 0 or opening round against Melbourne kicked 1-6 in the first quarter, and then you know, to the Swans 3-3. So you know, Swans made more of their opportunities, and then it was 2-8 to 4-3 at halftime. So, you know, really Melbourne, you know, we spoke about bad kicking and bad football earlier, but Melbourne just couldn't finish off their work, and the Swans ran away with it in the last quarter of that game. it could have been a much different game at halftime. And then maybe the perception around the Swans could be a little bit different. And then, you know, we don't also don't know how well Collingwood's going. They've lost their two opening games and you know, weren't really all that competitive last week against the Swans. So how much of that was Sydney? How much of that was Collingwood? I'm not sure we really know, but what we do know is that they've won both of their games and, you know, in the end done so reasonably convincingly.
Yeah, and if we look at their stats from last year and look at what's happened so far this year, and we acknowledge that it is difficult to compare the a season length of stats compared to two games, but so far the Swans this year have gone at 1.75 kicks per handball, and that's an increase from 1.5 last year. So that really indicates that they're trying to make more use of their foot skills. And then that's also helped them get the ball inside 50 more. So last season they were 0.5, minus 0.5 inside 50s per game compared to their opponents. But so far this year they're plus 9. So they're kicking it more and they're getting it more inside 50 so far this year. As I sort of hinted at earlier, centre clearance is an area where they are down. It wasn't an area of strength for them last year. They were down 1.4 per game, but they are currently down minus 5.5 in 2024. But clearly, though, they don't rely on centre clearance given their results, but it is something looking at those stats and how we performed against the Hawks. It is an area we potentially can gain an advantage in. But where they have improved is in stoppage. So they've gone from minus 2.1 to plus 8.5 a game. They're not going to remain at plus 8.5 stoppages a game for the whole season, but it really shows how important the addition of Brody Grundy has been to that side as sort of that around the ground ruckman and being, you know, really important in the stoppage game. And then another area where they've really improved on is denying their opponent shots from inside 50. So across 2023, teams average a score 46% of the time when entering the Swans defensive 50. In 2024 so far, that number has dropped to 41%. So this is coupled with the fact that inside 50 entries themselves, the Sydney's opponents have dropped from an average of 54 to 49. So currently for the Swans compared to last year, teams are entering forward 50 less but against the Swans, and they're being less efficient when they do so. So they're both denying their opposition entries to 50 and making it difficult for them to score when they do get in there.
Yeah, and again, it's difficult to take a gauge on how much of that is what the Swans do. I'm sure it's a fair portion, but we also know that it's something that Melbourne really struggle with and have historically now for a couple of years. And then the Pies, don't have the dominant key forwards and they've got some forwards out of form. So again, you know, we'll get an opportunity to get a bit more of a read on that when we take them on this week. And whilst you're right, mate, they've had a big improvement in winning stoppages and Brody Grundy is a big part of that. I think he's their second for stoppage clearances so far this season. They're not scoring from that advantage. They scored 23 points from stoppages last week and none of that came from stoppages in their forward 50. I think Brody Grundy's a player, and we saw this at Collingwood. He's a player that helps win stoppages because his ruck craft isn't great, but he gets down and follow ups really well. And he pretty much just plays like a tall midfielder, but his ball usage isn't all that good. So their effectiveness from stoppages, I don't think is, you know, as significant as maybe the raw numbers make it sound. Where they are doing a lot of damage is on turnover. As it stands, they're the number two ranked team in the AFL for tackles. They've averaged 67.5. The AFL average last season was 61. They're ranked fourth for inside 50 tackles, averaging 14. The average in the AFL last year was 10.8 per game. And they're equal fourth for generating turnovers, averaging 73, which is five more than the AFL average from last season. And that allowed them to score 77 points on turnover last week against the Pies, which, you know, I think was partly self-inflicted by Collingwood and a fair bit to do with how the Swans structured up as well.
Yeah. And I guess just talking about that game against the Pies, let's get stuck into what happened in that game. And Sydney 15-12, 102, did defeat Collingwood 10-9, 69 at the MCG. So obviously Sydney are now 2 from 2 to start the season, and they took the lead against the reigning premiers early in the second quarter, and then they didn't relinquish it for the rest of the game. It was a game that the Swans dominated between the arcs. They stopped most of Collingwood's rebound 50 attempts. Overall, the Swans did kick 12 goals, 6 from intercepts, with 47 of those points coming from forward half intercepts. And that was just, as I said earlier, they really didn't lose. They really didn't do well at the center clearances. They lost that by eight, and they lost contested possession by six. It does strike me a little bit of sort of Collingwood circa 2022, where they didn't really win the contested ball or the clearance numbers, but they were absolutely ruthless on turnover and generating points that way. They obviously don't play exactly the same way this 2022 Pies did, but it does sort of ring a bell there with the way in which they're winning games. Errol Goulden led the way with 30 disposals and 650 metres gained, whilst Ollie Florent, Harry Cunningham and Tom McCartan each had over seven intercept possessions. In terms of the goal kickers, Logan McDonald led the way with four goals and Chad Warner kicked three. So, a lot of familiar names there and a lot of names we have to worry about going into Saturday night.
Yeah, their star players all really stepped up, didn't they? And you just went through it. Goulden led the way with disposals and meters gained, and you know he was their best player last year. McCartan is really solid for them down back, but they had their problems. The Pies up forward, and then they also had their problems at the other end of the ground. And without the likes of Murphy there, the Pies are really struggling to hold opposition forwards. And Logan McDonald got off the chain and kicked four. So it was a really, really stunning performance by Sydney. They did what they needed to do with ball in hand, and then were able to work really hard on restricting Collingwood's ball movement and put enough pressure on them to fall into some bad habits and make plenty of mistakes. So I think our coaches would have watched this game and really got a lesson on some of the things that we need to do around separating our forwards and making sure that we don't give the likes of McCartan the opportunity to intercept the way that he did, being a little bit stronger in the contest on Logan McDonald, because he is still early in his career and he's not, whilst he has developed and grown and got stronger, he's still not that bollocking key forward just yet. And someone like Ben McKay does present a different challenge for him. And then what do we, we would have been thinking plenty about what we do about players like Isaac Heaney and Errol Goulden to try and restrict their influence on the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's start turning our attention to Saturday night then and what's happening with the teams. And we'll start with the Bombers. We've sort of mentioned a few of the force changes already with Reid, Redmond and Guelphy through injury and suspension. And Harry Jones has ended up being omitted, mainly in part to fit Sam Draper in, who's coming in for his first game of the year. And he's joined by Darcy Parrish, Jaden Laverty and Nick Hynes. From those names coming in, I think you're getting four, at the very least, solid AFL players and a couple of absolute barometers for us in Darcy Parrish and Sam Draper, who can have major impacts on games. So, it's frustrating to not have that continuity, but also we're bringing in some quality players there that can really give us something that can help us win the game.
Yeah, I think it largely makes sense, doesn't it? Laverde, comes in for Reid, but, Ridley's not available for selection just yet. So, Jaden, our list depth has certainly developed a fair bit when we get to bring a player like Jaden Laverde, who wasn't out last week because he was injured, but was out, on just purely on selection protocols. He didn't make the final 22. So I think, that's a bit of a win in itself that we're able to do that. I guess Hind is going to play at one end or the other. To throw a third variable, he could also be sub, but he either replaces Redmond and plays at halfback as he did in the VFL practice match last week, or he plays forward and replaces Guelphy, which would then probably mean that, Sardis starts on the wing and Kelly starts in the back line. Parrish picks himself. I do expect it means we'll see a bit more spread through our midfield rotations, and Parrish, along with Merritt and Perkins, spend some time forward. All three of those throughout different parts of their career have shown they can be really effective at playing half forward. And in fact, if we think back to that win against the Swans at the MCG a couple of years ago, I think Zach kicked three for the game and spent a fair bit of time trying to elude Rowbottom, who was going to him from memory and played at half forward and was really effective in that role. And then we'll have Draper and come in and work with Goldstein to tag team against Grundy and work him over as Phillips and Draper did in Gather Round last season. And then I expect Draper to obviously spend a bit of time forward. We've heard that he's played a bit of time there in the two VFL practice matches and been training a fair bit there as well. I'm not I don't normally get too fussed about selection, you know, good, bad, or otherwise, but I quite like this. I think we bring in, you know, we obviously bring in one of our best midfielders. We keep it simple, I should say, in replacing our forced outs. And then we ring a bit of a change to counteract the strength of the opposition by running Draper and Goldstein against Grundy.
Yeah. I'm interested. You mentioned Hine potentially could be the sub, and I don't think that's quite likely given the outs. As you say, I think he sort of fills one of those Redmond or Guelphy positions, but it does leave a question about what happens with Sardis, whether they do use him as a sub again, especially after he had such a big impact coming on. You know, I'm hard pressed to think who else would make a good sub out of the players that are on the field, without affecting the structure of the side too much. So unfortunately for him, he might end up being that sub again this round. And I think bringing of Darcy Parrish, I think there's been a bit of, you know, and especially after the game that Perkins played, how do you keep Perkins' midfield time up whilst also giving Parrish the midfield time that he needs to be as good a player as he can be? And I think one of the opportunities there is with Zach Merritt. I think you sort of mentioned, or you will talk about him potentially playing half forward, but I also think there's potential for him to move to the half back. We obviously had a lot of problems moving the ball from half back, and Zach's probably our best ball user. You know, getting him at half back to help deliver the ball, get through that Sydney zone, and you know, prevent having those same turnovers that we did against the Hawks there. I'm not sure that's how they'll go, but that is an option there.
Yeah, it's all about flexibility, isn't it? We've heard Brad Scott speak a lot about the need and want to bring flexibility to this side and be able to pull on different reins throughout a game. So I think that's an option. I guess the other sub candidate could be Caldwell. You know, he only spent a little bit of time in the midfield, played mostly at half forward last week. So Parrish comes in. We're going to need to rotate some of those mids forward a little bit more to fit Parrish in. So does that mean that Caldwell slips out to the sub and then we've got a fresh midfielder to bring on when and if we need it? But, you know, good thing is, mate, there's lots of options there and we do have flexibility. And then if we just quickly touch on the Swans, they've brought Corey Warner in, who replaces Robbie Fox, who's out with a calf. You obviously don't like to celebrate an injured player, of course, and certainly not what I'm doing, but I think Robbie Fox is a bit of a loss for them. He's an unheralded player and probably one that some people haven't even really heard of, but for a team like us who struggled to transition from halfback last week, Robbie Fox has been playing as a bit of a lockdown forward for them. He leads them for inside 50 tackles and probably would have been a candidate to go to a Nick Martin and put some real pressure on him. So I think it's, you know, again, not celebrating an injured player, but a little bit of a win for us that he's not available this week.
Yeah. Well, let's start looking at the Swans and then thinking about how the match could play out and where we might be able to get some advantages. And again, we've touched on this a couple of times now, but the area that the Swans have been dominant in are stoppages. Well, one of the areas they've been dominant is those stoppages. They've averaged 8.5 more stoppages clearances across their two games, and that's even without not being very, very good at centre clearances, at least based on the metrics there. Although you did sort of touch on the fact that they're not really scoring from that dominance as well. So I guess how do we address that and potentially make use of our advantage there in the centre clearance?
Yeah, well, centre bounce play was really smart last week, and it's been something that's been good for us for a while. Even though we've been a struggling team, our centre bounce work and being able to score from centre bounces is, you know, we've said it before, it's kind of been our one wood. So I think firstly, that gives us an advantage in the game that we want to make the most of. We need to bring that same level of combativeness that we did last week, that mix between defence and attack, and not change anything in terms of how we approach it just because we're going to have a different mix in there in bringing Parrish back. As I said earlier, you know, they've really shared the load in their midfield, unlike what we saw last week with someone like, say, Newcomb being their dominant inside mid. The Swans don't really have that. Heaney's had seven centre clearances, I should say, in his two games. Then it's Grundy with four, and look, you know, great that he's getting them, but you don't really want your ruckman getting high numbers of centre clearances. And then Warner's had two in two games, and then no one else has had more than one. So, yeah, besides Heaney with seven, they haven't had a really influential centre bounce midfielder when it comes to centre clearances. I think Heaney is someone that we want to restrict. He's in great form. He's probably got 6 Brownlow votes at the moment. He's been racking up coaches' votes. So if Setterfield can mind him when he is in the midfield, then I think it allows our other mids to go to work and see if we can expose the Swans and their defence by getting fast and deep ball inside 50. And then at stoppages, I think it's just more of the same that we saw last week, and getting that balance and mix right, and just being smart around the players that we want to stop and restrict, and then positioning our own players for effect, you know, like we did with Zach Merritt and the like last week. We won stoppages 24-17 against them last season, and clearances in total was 42-29. They gain Grundy but lose Parker from that side. We gain Goldstein and Draper over Phillips and Bryan. So I think, you know, our midfield gets bolstered a little more than what theirs does, given that they have lost Parker as well. So I think we should be confident that in that part of the game that we can have a really influential result. I think Sam Durham has a really important role to play in this too. I think I miss Callum Mills too, who played against us last time as well. So yeah, they're really down on some options that compared to what they had last year compared to us. But yeah, Durham, I think, you know, he'll spend some time in the midfield, but I expect with Parrish back, he'll also be playing through half forward. And I want that. I want Durham spending high half forward minutes this week. I want him working with Gresham and Menzies to lock the ball in and create stoppages in our forward 50, because I think we have some offensive weapons now to hit the scoreboard from those situations. We need to be able to lock it in first. And then I'm excited about the challenge in this part of the ground. I think there's an opportunity, you know, I threw Caldwell up as an option to be the sub, trying to think, you know, what our coaches might do. But, you know, if I was given the whiteboard to pull the magnets this week, I'd be giving Caldwell a job. He hasn't had one of these jobs in a while, but I think Errol Goulden's a player that you know, we really need to put some time and effort into him. And I think whilst Caldwell gets lost at half forward in transition, he's great at defending and pressuring when the ball is in his area, but not so good when he has to move into the zone. I think if Durham can go and replace what Caldwell was attempting to do in that part of the ground, then it lets us run Caldwell with Goulden, whether he's playing on the wing or the middle of the ground, and just ask him to go and restrict and beat and be really physical and combative against, you know, probably their best genuine midfielder, you know, along with Heaney.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And their next, and they're probably their key strength that they've got is their intercept game. And, you know, they're only up plus 1.5 on intercept differential, but it's where they're generating those intercepts and the impact they're having on the scoreboard that is really giving them momentum, as we saw against Collingwood. So again, we've touched on this in the Hawthorn review, that where we were turning over the ball was a major problem against the Hawks, and it's, if we do the same thing again, it's going to be even bigger against the Swans. Is there much we can do about the disposal from our back line other than hoping that our distributors execute better this time?
Yeah, thoughts and prayers, right? I think, firstly, you just have to put a line through what happened against Hawthorn last week and encourage our players to be brave and just go and take the game on again. And we know that a player like Nick Martin is a lot better than what we saw with ball in hand last week. So, you know, he's had a pretty stunning start to his AFL career and hasn't put in too many bad shifts. But what we have seen is when he's had a quiet game or had a poor game, he bounces back really quickly. So, you know, I'd just be telling him to forget about last week and just get back to doing what he does best and back in his vision and back in his skills, be aggressive going into the corridor. I'd also encourage Jaden Laverde to use his foot skills and give his opponent something to worry about. He's a better kick than I think a lot of us instinctively think that he is. And then I'd tell Hind, if he's back there, and McGrath to just run and carry and link up and take the game on when the opportunities present themselves. You know, if we're static, then we'll play right into the Swans' hands. I do think that we need to get more out of Wright and Langford than we did last week. You know, one of them or Draper needs to get up the ground and give them an outlet kick down the line when we need it. It's another area where we can create stoppages and try and influence the game that way. So, you know, if we need an outlet kick to a contest, get the ball to ground, give us a stoppage and give us a chance to reset in a part of the ground that I think we can, you know, despite the Swans' improvements in that area, I think that we can win. We need to see a fair bit more of that. And yeah, I think we touched on it earlier. We had 69 inside 50s against the Swans at Marvel in that 2-point loss last year. the Pies played into their hands through that cautious ball use. I want us to be really aggressive whenever we get the opportunity to do so.
Yeah. I guess we've touched on the big Swans' strengths. What about Essendon's strengths? So how do you think, what do you think the Swans are looking at in terms of the Bombers and what they would be wanting to stop and what we would be really be wanting to take full advantage of?
Yeah, they're not tall down back. Blakey's their tallest at 196 centimetres, but he doesn't play as a key back. He plays as a, you know, he's their Nick Martin. He's their offensive, running, kicking, explosive halfback defender. So he's unlikely to be playing on a, you know, on a Langford or a Wright or one of those. He's going to play at halfback and look to run off his opponent. Then they've got McCartan at 194 centimetres, who, you know, they really like to free up as their intercept marker. Malikan's now become their lockdown defender. So at 194 centimetres, he's probably going to get the Peter Wright matchup, with McCartan then going to a, you know, Langford or Draper. So we can really stretch him. And then Rampy's their next tallest defender at 187. So I think we've got the ability to really stretch them in the air if we can get some separation and quality ball movement. I think they'll be concerned that we have more genuine goal threats in our forward line now with those guys that I mentioned, plus Gresham, plus Menzies, Draper I touched on as well. So yeah, if we can get that carry from halfback and get drive through clearance, I think they'll be concerned about our ability to kick a winning score, which for all intents and purposes we did against them last year. The question is then on us, can we restrict them from doing the same?
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Well, look, let's head to our final thought for the show, and we'll keep it pretty simple this week. It's John, I finished this thought. It's going to be a big challenge for.
Mate, I'm going to cheat a little bit and two. Big challenge for my sobriety. I've been sort of dry through most of February and into March. So could be a big challenge for that, watching on the TV against the Swans. But on a serious note, I think Sam Draper, first game back from a long layoff. So he's going to have some cobwebs to blow off. But I think he's also going to have a really important role to play, both in the ruck and being really physical and combative against Grundy and running him around. And even when he's in the ruck, getting forward and really stretching out the kilometres that Grundy's going to have to cover. And then we're going to need some genuine forward craft from him as well. If he just stands mobile and expects us to kick on his head and try and take contested marks, which we know isn't his forte, then all he's going to do is clog up space and make it easier for the Swans defenders. So he's going to need to really have some nous about him and be dynamic when he's playing forward. What about you?
I think it's a big challenge for Nick Cox. Last year, he played on Logan McDonald for most of that game, and he kept him to one goal. And obviously, I think McDonald's probably started this season better than he was going at that stage last season. But if Nick Cox can play that role in McDonald, who's kind of probably going to be their number one target down there, it's going to give Ben McKay a lot more freedom there to play on, say, probably you imagine it would be a McLean or maybe a Marty there. But if Nick Cox can do a similar job to what he did on McDonald last time, yeah, this coming week, it's going to make it much easier for us to win the game.
Yeah, good shout, mate. They're from the same draft, right? So, you know, same age, similar time in the system. Obviously, McDonald's had the benefit of not missing as many games through injury as young Nick has. But yeah, he looked good on him down back last year. He did some good things last week when he went back as well. So yeah, big challenge for him and an opportunity to sort of cement his spot in the team, isn't it? With Ridley still a question mark on when he's back, and obviously Reed's going to be out for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, that'll wrap us up for this evening. Firstly, I want to say a big thank you to everyone who came along to the Founders Bar before the match against the Hawks and had a bit of a chat leading into the season. I know we were all very worried about how the game was going to go, but we didn't need to really have those worries. But it's always good to see a lot of familiar faces and then a few new ones as well. So that was really pleasing to see. And then just as always, thanks for all the work that you do. Thanks for putting all that effort into your match review and everything else you do behind the scenes to really help this show work. Appreciate it as always. Any final words from you?
No, I think you said it all, mate. Thanks to you too, and yeah, thanks again to everyone who's supported and sent messages and talked about footy this week. It's been great to have it back and great to talk about a win. So let's hope we can make it two from two this week.
Well said, mate. Thanks, everyone. Stay safe and go Dons. There we go.